any other organizers or panelists on the line. When you are ready to begin the presentation, press the Start Broadcast button on the GoToWebinar control panel to allow all attendees to hear you. This system will notify you once you begin your broadcast.
Hi everyone, I'm sorry for the delay.
You will no longer hear beeps until someone else joins the con. The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Citrix is going a bit crazy at the moment. So I will just ask one person on text that you are that I am coming through loud and clear, and that you can see my picture, because it was just giving me a blank page, and I've been trying for 15 minutes. So I'm on now. So just waiting for, yep, okay. So I'm all good. All right, so I have just got back. We, 40 of us, went over to China with Dimpna, and we ran around the place having fun, looking at building materials and stuff. I made the mistake of actually going for a jog in Shanghai, and I think I've got about 3 kilos of smog in my lungs, so I feel horrible. So if I cough and splutter in the middle of it, you'll have to excuse me. We've went over. We had a good time. So we're going to do a webinar in a little while about that, and what that all means and why we went over there. Very interesting how they how a 2,000-3,000 year old culture works, and how we are only a very young nation as far as white Australia is concerned, and how we relate to that. Dimpna's in the middle of a flight from Hong Kong to Australia, so she arrived in the morning, so she obviously couldn't be online. So I'm here, and we talked about it, and we thought, well, probably the best way to go about today's webinar is to do something that's fairly simple for most people and go through construction, what construction really is about. I know that looking at the attendees on the list today, that we've got a fair few builders online that I know of, and happy for you guys to put some input into the presentation as well if I bring up any points and you want to add to it. So questions, as always welcome there. So there's a questions tab on your control panel so that you can bring that in, and I'll have a look at that every now and then. Just to see if any questions have come in while I'm talking about different things. Now, like I said, construction is one of those things that invariably at some point in time you are going to do. The first thing that I would start with is, I'll come to that. Builders are important to work with, knowing what you want, because that's sometimes the biggest problem. Knowing what you want and knowing what you should have, and asking for what you want and asking for what you should have, is pretty important. Now, we have this thing in construction. I'm so unemotional about construction, although I've recently had an emotional builder. I finishes for me are going to be fairly similar. I think that you should go in most areas nowadays. Stone tops aren't that much more expensive. The basic toilets, you can get a bit better for not much more. In days gone past, the cheapest toilet you could get 15 years ago was probably about $350, $400. And you could spend, I've actually installed a toilet that was worth $8,000. I don't know if the owners know what they have to do with that, but they spent out $8,000 on it. And it wasn't anything flash in the pan. Nowadays, though, you can buy a close-coupled concealed toilet for about $150 from Bunnings, and we actually saw a fair few of those in China, where they sell them in China for about $30 and Bunnings is selling them for $150. So the standard product has come down in price a lot. So, let's start. Let's talk about construction and what that means and what you have to do. So the first thing that you got to look at is, when you're doing a construction, is the need of the construction that you're putting forward. I've been hyping on with a few other people in recent years about the fact that every developer is building a 4-bedroom, 2-bathroom house, and people keep on renting them and people keep on buying them. And that's not because that's what they want. Well, I'm not here to say that it is or it isn't. Looking at figures, listening to councils talk, and there was one very good council talk I listened to, a strategic planner, who was talking about 25% of our population have more than two kids, right, of our families. Yet we 75% of our builds are four-bedroom, two-bathroom house. So that means that 75% of the population are either retirees, single people, couples, or a couple with one child, and we're providing four-bedroom, two-bathroom stock. It doesn't make much sense. The only reason it rents is because there's nothing else to go for. So, that's a thing that we have to look at. Is there a need for four bedroom, two bathroom? Is there a need for three bedders, one bedders, two bedders, studios? What are we talking about? You know, I'm acutely aware of the tiny house movement across the world, and that's where we're talking about literally 11 square meters of housing. They build it on a dual axle trailer, and rather than living in a house, they just put their trailer on a block of land, and that's the way they live. So, you know, lots of stuff like that. So the style, what suits the area? If you're on the last webinar and Dipna pissed herself laughing at me because I showed the house that I grew up in, you know, that style of house doesn't suit Australia. It'd go down perfectly overseas, but it's not what sells. So same thing, you know, you don't want to go building a double brick sandstone or red brick home in the middle of central Queensland. It doesn't make much sense because it'll be out of character with the area. So, you know, you've got to think about those things ahead of time. The cost effectiveness, you know, what is it that you're trying to do? How do your numbers work? Is it cost effective to do a style of build just from an emotional base, or do you do it on a numbers base? The marketability, you know, can you get an agent? Can you do it? Can you help the agent? Can you put stuff together? And can you put it out there, and will it move really quickly? And the details of the market, you know, how many single people are there? How many couples are there? How many single mothers are there? You know, all that sort of stuff that you need to put together so that you can actually consider what style of property. I'll give you a classic example. Leichhardt in Sydney has a very high population of, I'd say Leichhardt, Stanmore, Marrickville, Dulwich Hill. High population of single divorcee mothers with kids. So, you know, your consideration there would be security, alarms installed, some really good secure windows, if not, God, I say it, bars on the window so that they feel comfortable. All that sort of stuff has to be put together so that you can end up with a product that's good for you. Actually, I might go to full screen. That might make it better for everyone. Computer's thinking a fair bit. All right, so there we are. So we've gone through that. The project team, obviously you're going to need a finance person. You're going to need a strategist that works with you, that understands where you're at, how much you can put in. And the finance person, when you're buying that property, if you're going to knock something down and rebuild, they're going to have to be aware of what you're trying to do, because they're going to have to go and get a construction loan on your behalf. If you don't tell them that you're going to knock it down and do something, well, they might end up picking the wrong lender for you, which means you'd have to refinance and there'll be fees. And depending whether you go to another broker, there might be some clawback fees. There's lots of stuff you've got to consider in that. The agents, you know, you need to have agents on board, not just for buying off them, but also for selling. So, you know, I've got particular agents that I will buy from all day long because they're so bad at selling. And then I've got agents that I'll sell with all day long because they're very good at selling. Now, generally, the ones that sell really well are not the ones that you can get on with absolutely greatly, because they've got that knack, that ability to be the bulldog, you know, always trying to get that sell. And that's the style of agent that you want to be able to sell your property. You want the laid back ones to be able to get it. The project driver, is that going to be you? Because this is your business, right? So in your business, the only person that's going to drive your business well and as good as you want it is going to be you. Now, if you're a bit lackluster on that, that's going to affect you and your business. This is not a hobby. And there's a couple of ways that you can drive projects. You can be an owner builder. Now, if you've never built before and you've never done any construction before, I would suggest that an owner builder is not the best way to go. That's because you're going to be the one that has to coordinate, that has to do all the things, that has to get all the prices. Now, you could become an owner builder and get someone else to build for you, but in which case they'd have their own license. I'd prefer to use their license because you've got home warranty insurance you've got to worry about, lots of different things you've got to worry about. To be an owner builder, you have to sit a test. You have to do some study and research. And in most states, you can only be an owner builder in your own name. Even if you buy in a trust, the owner builder has to be you. So you would only be able to do that one in every 5 years. So if you were a married couple, you could do one and your partner could do another every 5 years. So be wary of that. So I know a few people that have tried to do that on a number of occasions and they get caught out because obviously you can only do it once every 5 years. Are you going to get your architect to be the project manager? Are they going to be the ones that look after your project for a percentage cost of the build? Now, some architects will have an incentive to keep the costs under a certain amount so that they get paid more. It's better to pay $1,000 more to an architect because he's kept you under budget by $50,000 than the other way around. So architects are degree trained people. They know how to draw, they know how to plan, they know how to project manage and look after after the builds. You can get a straight out project manager. Now there's people out there that you can employ to be a project manager on your site and they can coordinate all the trades for you. Now, project managers, there's some that work for building companies or there's some that you can employ to look after your job. The best way when you're first starting out is to get a builder. And the builder there is going to start, he's going to start on the job and he's going to hand over a complete set for you. Now, there's a number of different things that you can do when you're doing building. You can go for a number of different contracts. You can go for a cost plus. You can go, I would like you to do a full turnkey product. So that's where you turn up at the front door at the end of the build, you put your hand out and the builder hands you a set of keys. They land in your hand and everything's done. Landscaping, concreting, windows, Venetian blinds, everything that you want to be put into the property has been done. And then you can start renting it straight away. Now, when it comes to approvals, there's a number of different things. Now, remember to ask some questions here. Just one second. I've got a comment here from Andrew, who's a builder in Queensland. Cost Plus is illegal in Queensland. And it does happen, but cost plus is where a builder will come to you and say, look, I'll charge you my hourly rate and I will charge you what the plumber charges you. And then I'll buy all the materials. And at the end of that, I'll add 10% or 15% or 20%, whatever you agree to. I think that that's a crazy way to go because when you're on a hourly rate, you don't seem to work as quick, or the tradies don't seem to work as quick as they would normally. So agree, Andrew, that cost plus is not actually legal in some states and that you should be very careful. Now, when it comes to the approval component of your build, you got the first stage, what I call first stage of approval. That is, you've got a development application or a material change of use, or in Melbourne, they call it a building approval. That's where you're going into council or the certifier and you're saying, I want to get and I want to build a house on this block of land. And you'll need, a set of plans with it. You'll need, you'll need the shadow diagram sometimes. You will need the amount of square meters that you're taking up. You'll have what they call the stick drawings. You won't have stick drawings, sorry. You'll have the plans. So you'll have elevations and the plan, what it looks like from the street, what it looks like from the neighbor's house, all that sort of stuff will go in there and that'll get approved. Now, in some states, you can do what they call a self-assessable application. So that's where you draw your plans up, you do what you need to do, you give it to a certifier, a private certifier. So rather than submitting it with the council, you submit it to a certifier and they approve it really quickly. Now, that stage of the application, that's good. Now, one of the platinums pulled me up the other day, and rightfully so, because when I talk about certifiers, I wasn't I was just presumed that everyone knew that the cost of a certifier and the application was the same as if you went through council. The only thing is that the time got shortened up. But what he said to me was that sometimes people don't realise that there is the same amount of costs. So the costs of your application will include things like your engineering diagram. So you need to get engineers to do that. You need your long service payments paid. Now, in most states, the building authority will, or the council will be collecting money on behalf of all people in trades, a certain percentage. Now, in New South Wales, I think it's 0.035% of the build price has to be paid into the long service payment scheme. That goes towards tradies that are registered. Every 10 years, they can take 6 weeks holiday for long service. In Queensland, it's called Q leave. I'm not sure about the other states, but remember there's fees in there. You are usually going to have some plumbing fees in there. You're usually going to have some electrical fees, especially if it's a extended connection with a unit development or something. You're going, you might have to be an upgrade of a transformer or something like that. You have to do an environmental impact statement. Now, a planner can do that, an architect can do that, a designer can do that. I mean, I can do my own because I've got enough experience now to do that, but I've seen it done over a number of times. If it's a council that's very nitpicky, then I won't do it myself. I'll pay someone. But if it's a council that's reasonably easy, I'll do my own. Then you've got the application or council fees that have to go with that too. So that's important. Now, I've got a couple of questions here. Can demolition costs be capitalized as part of the construction loan when borrowing construction finance? That'll depend on your builder and whether he's willing to put that into the contract. But I believe that if the same builder is doing it, yeah, it wouldn't be a problem at all to include the demolition cost as part of the construction. Whether the bank, if the bank sees the actual demolition cost in there, they may have a problem with it. So that's where you need to talk to the builder about your wording. From Colin, if you're an owner builder, the builder does not provide QBC. If you are an owner builder, the builder does not provide QBC home monitoring costs. If it's possible to provide a quote such as a new house or renovations, unforeseen work should only be done on cost plus basis. Okay, so what's Colin saying there is that if you're an owner builder, you need to get home warranty insurance on your own home. So that home warranty insurance is where even builders have to get it as well on every job. If they go broke or if you or there's some defective work, that will cover the build price in there and any future works. And usually up to 7 years is the rough rule of thumb. So just let me go to the second part of this. QBC home warranty and cost plus contract are not allowed, okay, to provide a quote such as a new house or renovations. Yeah, all right. So that's no problem there. Oh, sorry. I've gone the acronyms. So DA is development application, and MCU is a material change of use. That's a Queensland term. That's where you're changing the usage of a property. So say I went and bought a house on a big block of land and I wanted to change that. I could then put a set of three units on there. Then I would be changing the usage from a single house to a unit development, and that's what a material change of use is. So I just used the Queensland term to make it easy for me. In Queensland, the QBSA, which was the Queensland Building Services Authority, is now called the Building and Construction such and such such such. So it's now called the BCC. I thought it was a QBCC. Queensland's recently changed the name of their Compliance Commission, have recently changed the name of their people. I'm not sure what that means, Peter. I do know what it means. I'm joking. Costings and feasibility. So when you're doing your feasibility, because sometimes you're looking at a block of land and you're saying, well, or you're looking at a house and you go, I don't know how much it's going to cost me to do that. And I can't, you know, I've rung some local builders and they've given me some ideas, but they don't really want to commit to anything because they don't know what I'm going to build, because they'll all say, oh, it depends what standard you want, mate, you know. So you're going to have to best guess your cost per square meter. Now, that you can ring a few builders and ask some costs. You could go up and down the street and knock on doors with people that have recently built. I like to itemize costs if you can from a builder's perspective, so that you can say to them, oh, what if we change that one there, could we do it cheaper? What if we did that way, could we get it cheaper? If you change the quality there, is that going to affect the price? If I change the quality, is that going to affect the end product? So, you know, you've got to be very aware of that. It's an interesting point that got made when we were in China by one of the expats we spoke to. And he said, in China, you go there and they present to you a $20 chair. And you as an Australian say, no, that's too expensive. I want it for $10. Now, they will agree to it. China will agree to building that chair for $10. You as an Australian think you've just got a bargain, but the Chinese has just heard that person there cannot afford $20, so I have to find a way to make that chair for $10, which means the quality changes. So be aware that when you ask for a drop in price, your quality may be affected from that. Sorry, I've just done something to my question box. There we go. Okay, quoted costs. So what is quoted? And I'll go into that a bit more. Time scheduling and holding costs. So you've got to allow for the fact that there's going to be a period of time where there's no income coming in for a new build. You've got holding costs on that. So there's interest payments that have to be borne during that process. And you don't want to go too tight on this because, you know, you're paying interest. We talked about the turnkey cost plus and contract price and inclusion and exclusions. And I've got a slide on that. Now, the cost savings, let's have a look at it. You might be able to get a contract from a builder and say, well, where is it that I can do something? I remember towards the end of my plumbing career, I had a couple of occasions where I bought toilets through my supplier. You know, it takes you years and years to build up with suppliers to give you good discounts. And I bought a toilet for one client and I bought a bath for another client. And with all tradespeople, we used to just mark up the cost by 5 or 10%, and then we'd send the bill. Well, you know, I'd sent the bill for these two different clients, and they happened to be at roughly the same time, and they both came back and said, I just looked it up on the internet, and I can buy it cheaper off the internet than you can buy it than what you're charging me. So what's the story? So in the end, I stopped buying items for my clients. I said to them, you go and buy the items, make sure they're on the job, and I'll install them. So when it comes to this here, you could be talking to the builder and saying, okay, look, I know you're making some margin on your price of materials and stuff. So what is it that I can do? You know, where can I save some costs? And you might be able to negotiate with them that you go off a new material purchase. Now, that they're not going to want that because they want smooth running jobs and they want to make sure that stuff turns up on time and they want to make sure it's the right stuff. Now, if you're very experienced, you can do that. You know, there's times where I've said to a builder, I'm going to pay you 10 grand on top of your normal costs, but I want you to take the materials out of the contract. I want you to take this out, that out, that out. Now, remember, I've got an itemized quote because I've gone off and said, well, I can price that. You know, I've now got a framing guy that will do it for 5 grand less. And I've got my PC items, which I'll go into, my toilets and stuff, I can buy for a lot cheaper than you've allowed. My fencing, I can probably get someone to do that pretty cheaply too. So I will get all of that stuff together. And so I might pay him 10 grand, which is probably what he was going to make out of it, but I might save 20 grand by going off and buying stuff. So you can buy stuff through eBay and Gumtree online. The Chinese importers I like, really, you know, you find them on eBay and they'll have a showroom in your city. The thing with the Chinese importers, though, is they start really cheap, and then by the end, after a couple of years, they get the same price as anyone else. So you then need to go and find another one that's only just started importing. Visit overseas. You know, my brother's building a very expensive house on the eastern suburbs of Sydney. And for him, you know, him and his wife, they went over to Bali on a business trip. They bought all their stuff and filled a 20-foot container that they wanted, beds and baths and basins and tiles and all of that sort of stuff. Happened to spend a few more days there, and that might have been at a resort, who knows. Went back home, got the container delivered. Now, if you're going to do that, you need to either have someone very trusting on the ground that's doing it, or go back over there and watch the container get loaded, because they will load it with lots of space, and like it or not, there's big waves and there's cranes that move your containers around. And if there's airspace in that container, it'll be just like jiggling stuff in a can, and it'll all get broken and busted up. Like I said before, ask for quality first, then tell them how much you want, then the price. So, you know, you've got to be knowledgeable around that. A question, how can you be able to obtain 3 building quotes before you go to building or tender? Look, you can give them a set of plans and get some estimate costs on the build price when you're talking about that. So, you know, you might have your initial set of plans without engineering, and you might go off, or you might have, I'm not sure. Hopefully I'm back now. Still recording. Yep. Okay. So I would go off and get three or four prices off some standard basic plans to start with. But it's very difficult sometimes. And New South Wales is one of the hardest because you've got to put a contract on no matter. So yeah, I mean, the only thing you can do is give them a set of plans that you think. Now with your quotes, you're going to get some quotes and you need to compare apples with apples. Now this is the hardest thing. And what I've been doing when I'm working with students is that I get them to make a series of points of what's on each quote, and then I want them to go through and have columns of each builder, and then they can tick the box whether the prime cost items is included, or whether they've allowed a fixed amount or they've just got an estimate amount in there. How much fencing are they allowed for? All that sort of stuff, so that in the end you can compare, and you may need to add some figures in. You can compare each builder. I reckon each builder talks to each other and says, let's not put the same type of quote in, because then that way it's going to be too easy to compare us. Let's make it really hard. Now, Tony and Marion have said they've gone over to Bali and they've filled a 40-foot container, and it's worked really well. Okay. Now, in the quotes, you're going to have, obviously, what they've allowed for. And what I would say is that you've got to look at the whole quote word for word. Your prime cost items, the agreed value. So that's an amount of money usually that a builder has allowed for your toilets and your basins and your oven and your kitchen sink and all that sort of stuff. I like to, if I can, give the builder exactly what I want, and I've already priced it, and I say that's the price that I can get if you get it from Bunnings or whatever. And that's what I want you to allow. And I don't want to go over, and we probably aren't going to go under. Or you put a top-end figure in and you say, I don't want to go over that price. And when it comes time to choosing it, you choose it and you make sure you get a discount on the price. Now, the other thing is provisional sums. Excuse me. Oh, that's half a kilo of smoke coming out. So when it comes to the provisional sums, they will allow for a certain amount of meterage sometimes. So they'll have, we've got our fencing provisional sum is for 55 meters of fencing. Now you might have 110 meters. So there's going to be an extra cost in that. So you want to make sure from the beginning that they've allowed for the full meterage. Then you go, okay, for concreting, they may have allowed for 100 square meters, but you've got 160. And so you, in the end, this is where people get their surprises, because they end up with a bit of Shanghai in Australia. You end up with a whole bunch of extras, which you're not expecting. And they're very cluey builders. They're well aware of how much they need to, but they put these provisional sums in. And if you get caught out just before they start the build and you've already signed up contracts, they say, oh, it's going to be 10 grand more, or it's going to be 5 grand more, or whatever. So I would always want someone to have a something in the quote that says the quote has been done off these plans. Now, if your plans aren't correct, then you could get caught out too. So, you know, you've got to be careful that, you know, the builder tells you verbally that there's central ducted heating in the place, but it's not on the contract. So that's where the inclusions come in. So the inclusions are really important. You want to go through every single letter of the inclusions document and say, you haven't allowed for this, or you've allowed for this and I don't want this. And I would actually attach some sort of document to annexure. Like if you've got the prime costs and all the types of toilets, I would attach it to the build contract as an annexure. In the inclusions, you want to make sure you're getting everything that you want. You don't want to pay too much for your job at the end. You want it from the beginning, you know what it's going to be. Now, if you're not experienced, you can get a quantity to surveyor to come in and price that up for you, right? So the quantity surveyor is where they'll come in and say, well, the build cost should be around this figure to this figure on the plans that you've given me. Now, QS people, they're sort of airy-fairy sometimes. It takes a lot to get a really good one. So, you know, you've got to find the right one, because otherwise they're going to be airy-fairy. Just a question here, Ian. Can you please run over the difference between prime cost and provisional sum? So the prime cost is usually they're not too far apart. The prime costs are usually related to things that are white goods, toilets, vanities, that sort of stuff. The provisional sums are generally around things like fencing, concreting, water meter connections, electrical connections, that sort of stuff, that which can be sometimes too hard to price. When it comes to fencing and concreting, they can price off plans, but they don't do it because they want to be the cheapest to get the build price, and then they hit you with the extra. And I'm sure this next comment, it's no, it's true. And I'm giving builders a hard time because Andrew's saying that builders don't go out to do that on purpose. Most of them don't anyway. It's just that they're in a rush because their paperwork is usually rushed. They just want to quickly get a price together, and then when they get the job, they look at it in detail, and that's where they pick up the other stuff. So question here. So provision is something generally by length, whereas prime cost is a particular item. Yeah, you could say that. When it comes to water meters, though, that's not a prime cost. A water meter connection would be a provisional sum. So it's not necessarily by square meterage or it just depends on the builder. And sometimes builders call them the same thing. But there are just two distinct things there. I will be getting to that question. So get it. Inclusions, your build contract, really important to make sure that you've got all that right, because that's going to be the nitty-gritty, the thing that gets you right from the beginning. And I've got one question here from Lynette. Cost for encasing the sewer. Brisbane, just a general rule of thumb per meter. We were coming up with 1,000 per lineal meter. Does this sound right? I've been out of the plumbing game for a while. $1,000 is what we used to pay 15 years ago. So, encasing a sewer is where you dig up and you put concrete all the way around it, about a cubic meter per meter of concrete. I would say that, as a rule of thumb, $1,000 would be, you're asking a $64 question here. I don't know the job. I don't know what the incline is. I don't know how deep it is. I don't know any of that. So you're better off to actually call some civil companies, some civil contractors, who, and if you can get one that specifically looks after plumbing, and sewer, then they're better to ask than me. What are your thoughts on using large building firms who have their own designs and do the building as well, Marston, Merritt and Gardner, to turnkey stage? We'll get to that. What I would say is that once you use one of their designs as a in your building application, then you're going to have to finish with their design and use that company, because they will not sell their design to another builder. They don't do that very often. So once you start with one of those bigger companies, you've got to finish with one of those bigger companies. Now, the styles of construction that you can do, we've got concrete, so straight out concrete. Now, in the concreting, you can do it as a pier type system, and you put some piers up and you put the slab down and you put some more piers up and put up another slab, and then you do some infill around that. The infill in that type of construction is usually brickwork. You can go for the old double brick style house, which Adelaide seems to love. That's where you've got two sets of bricks, so an outer brick wall and an inner brick wall. Then you've got brick veneer. So that's where you've got an outer brick wall and the inner wall is either timber or metal frame. You've got a portal frame. So portal frame is a steel frame. So you put some footings in, they come along with a Meccano set, and it's already been constructed off site. And when they bring it on site, they then start to put it together. They bolt it together or weld part of it together. So that's a style of construction you can do. Light construction. So lightweight construction is either they put a slab down and then they just put a timber or metal frame up, or they put piers down and they do joists and bearers on the subfloor. They get a timber frame floor down and then they frame up from there upwards. So that's light construction. Now, in the sustainability area, you've got mud brick houses. That's where they build their bricks out of a certain type of clay and they build it out of that. You've got straw bale houses where they put the straw together. They build a house and then they render the inside and outside. They've got really great thermal stuff to it. And just because I was thinking about the three little pigs, I thought the stick building was a good thing too. So sticks is like lightweight construction. So whenever you hear someone in the trade talk about stick building, that's where they get that's the same as light construction, where they get pieces of timber and they make a frame out of it, out of their sticks, and they build the property. Question here. Is it a good idea to start with demolition of a possible building site before a DA approval to minimize the delays experienced between demolition and the actual construction? Demolition takes 2 days. So I would not go through the process. One, because to demolish a property, you actually need approval. I've actually seen someone demolish a house on a block of land thinking that they were saving some time. And what they did by doing that is they lost the usage rights of that house. It was an industrial block and they weren't allowed to put the house up that they had applied for. Had they left the house there, the council would have approved the new one. So generally, you're going to need approval to actually demolish a property. So I wouldn't go doing without permission. Okay. Now, when you say, well, I don't know what it's going to cost me to build, then I would suggest that you go online and go on to BMT Tax Depreciation, and they've got an online tool. So what I'm going to do is go into here. I would say, sorry, someone just added in here. Eco panels also. There's a lot of eco panels that out at the moment. They are either steel or fibrous cement outside, and between and sandwiched between two sheets of fibrous cement or steel or some sort of product is either polystyrene, polyurethane, a mixture of cement with polystyrene, lots of different stuff in there, and you literally slip it together, and it's like a jigsaw puzzle. You just put sheets end to end. Now, just let me go to BMT. BMT cost calculator. And hopefully it will come up quickly. And with the cost calculator, what it does for you is actually give you a number of variables that you can put in. So one of the variables is the type of construction. The second variable is the place that you're building. The other variables, so like, the location, Sydney. And the other variable is the square meterage. So here I've got a drop-down box, and I can say, I've got a three-bedroom brick veneer, project home level block, weatherboard, full brick, four bedrooms. I can go to three bedrooms, full brick project homes, architecturally designed executive residence, all that sort of stuff. So I can choose one of those. You've got Sydney, Cairns. You're gonna have to choose the closest place to you. Remembering that if you're in Mackay, for example, you'd have to use probably Cairns or something else, and then you'd have to add a little bit. The type of finish. So is it a medium finish or high finish? So I'll put in medium there. The construction date is going to be this year, and so I'm going to say 2014. The reason they've got the other dates is to calculate depreciation. And then we've got the floor area. So I've got 150 square meters is how much I'm going to do there. I calculate that, and it will automatically come up with a cost for me. And the cost to build a three-bedroom weatherboard project home in Sydney that's a single level, and it's a standard shelf design, is 175, 176,000 to 195,000 is what I'm going to have to spend in that area. So sorry. A couple questions here. Let me go. How much approximately would demolition of, let's say, three-bedroom house cost in lightweight, and how much in double brick? It's going to be dependent on the council. Some councils want you to pull it apart stick by stick. If it's got asbestos in it, it's going to be expensive. If you literally have to drive a machine over the top of it and put it into a back of some semis and drive it away, you're speaking as low as 10 grand. And if you've got asbestos in there, it could be up to $30,000, $40,000. So it'll depend on the type of construction and what's in it. Colin said, one advantage we find with lightweight construction is by using the same size slab, you end up with a larger internal size. There are also a lot of different external products out there that require no maintenance. Good selling feature, or equally as good if a rental reduces maintenance costs. So, yep, thank you, Colin. All right, back to the webinar. All right, the type of constructions you can use. You've got pod construction. So that's where you go and buy these buildings and they're already set out. So you might buy a pod that is a bathroom and kitchen pod and build a house around it. You might buy a series of pods. You know, I remember when I first bought a property, our first property, and we wanted to build something else, we went to it says I've got no sound here, but I'm presuming it may be your connection, Leslie. You know, we looked at yurts, and yurts were this 22-sided thing, you know. They were 22 sides for the big one, and then out of one of those sides you would actually create a hallway and you put a bedroom pod in there, and then you'd put out of the next one you'd put a bathroom pod in there, and so, you know, you'd end up with this galactic style thing. These pods, there are some really great companies out there that are doing them. What I've found with these pod companies is that they run out of money, and that before they can get themselves off the ground and functioning, they sort of run out of business. You know, I've seen some really nice pods, and when you go to contact them, they don't answer their phone or it's disconnected. And then when you do a search, the company doesn't exist anymore. So, all good with that one. Does the $195,000 turnkey package inclusive of everything dry ice landscape? Not necessarily. It's just a cost per square meter on top of that. So you're going to have to add extra stuff, and you do it anyway just to be safe. Okay, house kits. So this is where you would you'd call up a company and you'd say, look, I want to build a house, and they'd put together a series of walls and floors and bearers and joists and all that sort of stuff. And then what they'll do is they'll deliver it to for you, either in a container or off the back of a truck. They'll drop it on the site, and then you start building this thing. And it's just like it's got a set of plans, and you follow the set of plans, and it's like a Lego kit. I will get to finance on these things in a second, and I will talk about that. How do you make sure the products are to Australian standards? Very good question. You need to get certificates. So the certificates that you'll want to see are a waterproofing certificate. You'll want a plumbing certificate. You need an electrical certificate. If it's coming from overseas as a container, then you need a steel engineering certificate. You need to have a sign-off from the company. There's lots of different forms around the country. In Queensland, you'd need a Form 15, which is the engineering on the building itself. You know, that. So you need to get, if you're going to buy something from overseas, then you need to start talking to your certifier and say, what is it that you need to see? Because, or the builder, what is it that you need? Because we need to get this passed and through council or through the certifier. So I can go out all the way and collect all the information for you. Just tell me what you want. But safety glass is going to be another one. It's such a big field to play with. And I know of thousands of dongers that got brought into the country for BHP that didn't meet standard. And so they all went to waste. Now, that brings us on to modular. So modular is where, you know, the modular is coming on, and I'm working at the moment with someone to come up with some really great designs with some really good output around what they look like, how they function, how they turn up on site, how you make it work so that they fold out and do all the sort of things and that they still look half good. You look at this one here and they're talking about $40,000 for these two rooms here. You know, you wonder whether you could do that as a standard build. Remembering that there's a certain amount of work that has to be put into this, and what does it look like at the back end? So, you know, facades are, I don't have any control over internet connection. I don't have any control over wireless. There's not much I can do about this. Just let me check my connection for a sec. Checking my connection. Yeah, I'm still connected to where I need to be. There's not much I can do about it. I'm sorry. Okay, so going back to the modulars, that the external look of these buildings are getting to the stage where cladding them, it makes a big difference, and boxing out and giving them a bit of 3D once they arrive on site makes a big difference. And so, and we had a look at a few modular factories over there, and it was very interesting to see what they're putting out there. Remembering that there needs to be fire rating and all that sort of stuff as well if you're going to use them as units. And I'm sorry, guys, I can't do anything about the sound. I'm trying my best. I'll get the hamster to run a bit quicker. But we are recording this so that you will be able to see it on the listen to it on the website. And I do believe the recording doesn't have the issues that comes our way. So, okay. So again, then you've got these, a containerized version, and you could use a shed company. So what I've noticed in a few places we've recently been looking for a house, we finally signed today on a new house to live in, and we noticed a few places that are buying sheds, a standard normal site shed, sorry, normal standard barn shed, and half of it's being fitted out as a granny flat, and they're really nice. On the outside, they're just a COLORBOND looking thing. You go into these sheds, and they're quite funky. Good use of space, and what they do is they live in that while they build the main house. Now, some of these products you can get containerized. Now, if you can get a container company to deliver you a standard size container, so that's a 12.2 meter by 2.4, the costs of movement are really low. As soon as you go outside of that size, then you're going to actually start paying. And the square meterage, once you go away from that size, the square meter price increases simply because you're not building a standard, so that the standard container size has been changed. And secondly, you're now having to pay for extra shipping costs because it doesn't sit in a normal standard container sized spot on the ship and on the back of trucks and all that sort of stuff too. So, then you've got tilt slab construction, and that's normally used for factory and commercial. Now, tilt slab construction, they do it in a couple of different ways. The first way is they actually create the tilt slabs and pour them at a factory somewhere, put them on the back of a truck, and then they turn up on site. The other way they do it, which has been in more recent times, is in a new industrial estate. They'll ring the owner of the block next door that hasn't built yet and pay them a fee to be able to set up on their site. And they'll set up the formwork, and they'll set up a really smooth base on the bottom of it by compacting some stuff. And then they'll go in and they'll pour a slab and smooth it out, wait for it to go off, and they put the lifting pins in place. And then they wait for it to cure. They ask the cranes to come in, they pick it up, and then they start putting them into position. And they're pinned together, and then they put the roof over the top, and the structure, a metal structure holds the roof together. So tilt slab construction is relatively cheap. I know that Tony and Marion, I think they're doing that type of construction on their factory that they're building at the moment. So if you've got the space nearby, it's really good. The concreter can do it. It doesn't cost much. It doesn't cost a lot. You've got the concreter that has, you've got the concrete truck that needs to be the concrete. You need a pump, and you need some concreters, and you've got your walls made. So they could be pouring walls while they're pouring slabs at the same time. And now you've got your standard project builds. So that's where it's in 7 to 11,000 per builder square. Now a builder square I think is 3 foot by 3 foot. Might be, I think, or might be 3 meter. I can't remember exactly, but I don't like working in builder squares. I just like to say square meters, and then that way. So, they're usually cheap to build because the builders have got their set of tradies that know exactly how the house is built, is designed, and they probably do, 30, 40, 50 of them every year. So the plumber does the same job 50 times a year. It makes it really easy and quick for them. And usually you'll get the building company to go in and do your council permits. So they'll put everything through. They can give you prices up front, and you can agree to it. Now, remember, when you turn up at their project home display centre, they got the top-notch everything. And if you go for the base product, you're going to have crappy doors, and your windows aren't going to be as good, and the granite bench top isn't going to be included. So you need to again go through the inclusions list. Let's have a look at a design that I quite like. And this was a project builder about a year and a bit ago. And what they've got here is a four-bedroom home on 150 square meters. Now, I reckon that's really good use of space, and it's got a double garage, and I reckon they could probably tighten that up a little bit more too. So, and that's also got an ensuite. I really like that design, and it's $125,000. Now, you know, if you could build that in Brisbane on any block that you got half good, then, you know, you should be able to make some money. Okay, every webinar I've listened to from Ultimate, I've had problems listening to what you guys are saying. I do not have the problem with other webinars I listen to. I'd appreciate if I could hear clearly what you were saying, because you have great stuff, very beneficial. Yeah, look, I'm like I said, I'm hoping in, you know, I come while I was away in China, my wife had to move us out of our home, and she moved a four-story home on her own with a couple of removalists and took care of everything. So we are actually living in a trailer park for the next 30 days until our house becomes available. So I couldn't do it from down there because I didn't have a connection. So I always come to Dipna's place and I work out of her office. In my new connection, fingers crossed that our new connection is going to have a direct wire and I can do it now. Like I said, I'm trying my best. That's why we record the webinars, to make sure that you can go through. And I will, you know, hopefully have a better connection in the next time. So just going back to that, that works out at $837 a square meter. Now, that is really good price. Now, if you can build for under, you know, as a builder, probably the builders out there will tell me, but in a capital city, if you can get under $1,200 a square meter, you are doing really well. So to pull this thing in at $837, yes, you might have to add some landscaping and stuff to it. So, you know, it'll come in under $1,000 to build this home. That's a really good price, you know. So just look at your square meterage prices. Now, the financing. This was the big $64 question. Now, when you're talking about normal construction finance, you'll have five or six payments that have to happen. So you'll have your deposit payment, then you'll have, so then the builder starts. So you put your deposit down, the builder will start. The builder's first thing will be to get the slab down or to get the sub base down, and they'll then ask for a slab payment. Then they'll ask for a framing payment. Now, between the framing and the lockup payment is the two biggest ones. So the frame will go up, they'll send you an invoice and you pay it. And if you don't pay it quick enough, or the bank doesn't pay it quick enough, sometimes they don't turn up and they wait for their payment to come through. Then you've got your lockup stage. Now, lockup stage is where you physically can lock the property up. Now, you may not have garage doors put on, but you can't get into the property. The windows are done. Then you've got the fit out stage. That's where you've got the gyprock goes on the walls and all the doors and frames start to happen. You know, all the things that you would expect to go on in the build would go on there internally. And some of your kitchen cupboards would go on. Now, maybe sometimes not the top, but the cupboards would go in. Then you've got the final payment. And that final payment is where everything's done. Your painting's done, your landscaping's done, your concreting's done. The driveways are put in, the garage door gets put on, all the trims get painted, you know, the hot water heater goes in, the electrical connection happens, the telephone connection happens, you know, everything, every part of that happens. The website for the sheds, it was just something that, one second, let me get back into that. I think it was just Widespan. Now there's lots of different companies that do that. So Widespan's just one of them. It's just one of the companies I saw there. So now that's under normal construction finance, and you could do that if it's just a one-off house. You could do that at 80% without too much hassle. Sometimes I've seen last year I saw a property in Brisbane. That where they gave 100% of the build cost, you know, when they bought the land, because there was so much value in the land that they bought, they actually gave a full costing on the construction loan. So they didn't have to chip in any money. If you have to chip in money, the deposit is usually where you have to chip the money in. So the bank will want you to put your money in first before they start putting in. So let's say the deposit stage is $19,000, and it works out that you only have to put $16,000 in. Well, you'll put your $16,000 and the bank will send a check for $3,000. And so this is how it would normally happen under normal construction financing. So when it comes to transportables or portables or pods or kit homes or, you know, any containerized versions of anything, then you're going to have to go to a there's really only a couple of ways that work. One way is that you pay for it yourself up front and get it put on site, and then once it's on site, you can value it. So let's say you did get approval for a construction loan. You could go looking for a builder that would be happy to back himself for the cost until you get your transportable on site, but there's going to be very few and far between there. So you might say to the builder, let's get a build price. I need you to put the slab down or the piers down, and then I'm bringing this product out. So the bank would release the deposit and the slab payment probably, and then you would get your transportables or portables delivered, and you'd end up having to fork that money out yourself for the frame, lockup, and fit out, and then go back to the bank. And so the bank will probably pay the builder or you 3, 4, and 5, so points 3, 4, and 5 in one hit, but you're going to have to pay the transportable company up front because they don't want anything leaving their factory without you paying for it. And usually you need to put 50% down while they are constructing in their factory. Or you need to find a transportable company. And the second point of that too is a bank won't finance that transportable until it's sitting on site, simply because they don't want it falling off the back of the truck, literally, or disappearing to someone else's block. So you could go looking for a company that will that has the funds and the backing to support themselves. So let's say I was buying a $150,000 transportable house. The company had $150,000 sitting in the bank account. You'd give them a small deposit of 10% or something. They'll build it. They'll deliver it to site. They'll stick it on the stumps, and then they'll go back to you and they say, all right, we want payment 3, 4, and 5 released to us now. That means that they've actually funded it onto your site. So rather than you funding it, they fund it. Now, they're few and far between, those companies. you got to be wary of that. So just a couple of questions here. Can you tell us the project builder of the floor plan you showed us at $800 a meter? Look, I couldn't tell you. I pulled it off the internet 2 years ago or a year and a half ago. It'd still be relatively current prices because the prices don't go up that hard. I can't remember. I do remember I just Googled project homes and I went to images and found them. Granny flats, same thing. You're going to have to fund them up front. In general, what percentage of deposit do you need to put in? I can't remember what the breakdown is. I'm pretty sure that your fit out payment might be lockup. Either lockup or fit out is 35% of the cost. Deposit's usually 10%. In some states, they're not allowed to ask more than 5 or 10%, depending on what state you're in. So you've got to be very wary of that. Now, just let me go and see if I can find. So the question was how to find that site. So I might go Project Home Builder Brisbane and just search that, and then go in there and go, well, rightio. Someone says it looks like a Dixon home, but they all look like Dixon's homes, surely. What I'll do is, rather than going to each one of there and having a look at designs, I go into images. So up the top, you've got web, maps, news, and images. I love the images tab because it shows you so much. Now, it's brought up images at the front, so I have to change that. So I have to do project home plans rather than builder in Brisbane. And so hopefully I'll get some plans up. If not, I might change that and go floor plans. So this is the thing you need to play with. You've got to play with words and see what comes up. So you've got some floor plans there. Let me pull this one up here. It's a Meriton. That's a 3-bedroom apartment. Not interested. You've got these other ones here. You could Australand, which is a two-story house, it looks like. And, you know, on their website, you can then go to their website from this page. So there's a number of different ways to find them. And that's what I would have done when I did these slides. Like I said, I did them about a year ago. And quite easy to find them. You have a look at this one here, SEQ building, and there's a 3, 4, 5 bedroom house, whatever it is. Okay, so that's how you would find it. It looks like a Dixon Homes brochure for the $800 build. I think the price is just the building only without any driveway and landscaping. Yeah, that's what I said. You would have to add some. So that's what I said. It was $800 and something. So it's probably going to be $1,000 per square meter by the time you've actually got in there and done that. Hi, I am new. Congratulations. I'm old. I would like to know where we can find vendors' information. Could you recommend one or two websites? Sure. Investor has APM built into it. And in APM, you can do some searches on the vendors. Same with Pricefinder and RP Data. Now, remember, Investor is a search engine tool that helps you find properties. And it also has a property research tool built into it. So you've got Australian Property Monitors. And Australian Property Monitors is the same as RP Data and same as Pricefinder. But when you get Pricefinder and RP Data, it doesn't search for properties. It only helps you research properties. So Investar is the one that actually does the thing where you can find properties that are for sale, and you can also find vendors' information. Now, in some states, it's difficult. Melbourne, for example, has some very high privacy laws, and that affects whether you can or can't find name and information of people. I recently got told that RP Data has some information on Victorians. Pricefinder doesn't. So Pricefinder, I use Pricefinder simply because I know how to drive that. It's a manual car for me. I've learned how to drive a manual car, and that's what I'm sticking with for now. I might go to an automatic soon, which is Investor. So, so for me, I use Pricefinder, but in Melbourne, Victoria suburbs, I find it difficult to find the owners. And with the rest of the country, I usually can find it on Pricefinder. So that'll be dependent on you. So any comments, questions, probably comments from people like Peter Scullion and Andrew Whitwell and Colin, that you're all builders and online here. It'd be good to, if anything, you feel I've missed anything here that you want to add. And any questions from anyone else? Have I missed anything? Do I need to elaborate on anything before I head off home and put my throat under some and lungs under some sort of conditioning system? So look, building's an interesting thing. Construction's an interesting thing. It's a very good learning process. Is there a step-by-step guide on what you've talked about on the website? There's some really good stuff, not on our website. It wouldn't take long for someone to put that together. It's going to change and vary a little bit from place to place and from build to build, because you're never going to build the same thing twice within reason. So that sometimes happens. So look, a step-by-step process from go to woe. I do talk about the building and construction process. So this weekend we have Fast Profits and Extreme Income, the Quantum events. And in those events, we go into real depth around subdivision and strata and the building process and the building application process and the development approval, all that breakdown on a step-by-step so that you can really get your head around it. There's only so much that we can fit into the ultimate program, and that's why we created that. Those extra seminars so that we can get in contact and you can ask direct questions while we're there, or I didn't quite pick that up, give me a microphone, I want to ask the question. Really important there's a few places left for this weekend. So if you're an existing Quantum, I think there's a deal going at the moment, you can come back and see it. If you want to upgrade, you can talk Knowledge Source about that. In Sydney market, what's the best way to source a property apart from online research? We've been through this a number of times, Rui, on webinars, and really it comes down to you having your finger on the pulse. There's no one way of finding deals. But being in the game for a little while now, most of our good deals come from, most of them, not all of them, come from relationships we've developed with agents and friends and people that know that we're in the game. Quite often I'll get a phone call from an old friend who knows that I'm in in property and go, oh, look, his mum's just gone into a nursing home and they want to sell their property. And I usually say to them, let's talk about it first. Let's talk about what I think the value is. Let's talk about what an agent's going to tell you the cost is. And I'm telling you up front, the agent's going to tell you more than I think. We can do an easy deal here. If I buy it from them, it's going to be without an agent's fee, because if you bring an agent in, they're going to charge the standard 2.5% or whatever it's going to be, and all that sort of stuff. So I love knocking on doors. I love talking to people straight out. I love cutting a deal where everyone wins out of the deal. So, with that person in a nursing home, if I was going to go in there and do a renovation, I go, well, I don't even want to buy it. Why do I want to buy it? I'm just going to sell it. How about she still owns it. I'll put some money in so that she can go off into the nursing home and I'll do the renovation. We'll put it on the market. Let's agree that the value is now 500. I'm going to spend 50 grand on it. That's 550. Let's sell it for 700 and let's split the difference. So, I get my 50 back, you get your 500, and then we get 75 grand each. They're the sort of deals I love to do. When it comes to searching, Investor by far is the best tool on the market. I watched Dimpner in China. We were doing some slides while we were getting foot massages. And she found about 10 deals in the space of 10 minutes that were really good deals. And she just kept on throwing them at me so I could put them in slides. That Investor tool is a great tool to look and to, once you know how to use it, is really amazing. Andrew says, to be careful with cheap stuff, especially stuff from overseas. Know that you have to check quality all the time. When it comes to plumbing fittings, they have to be watermarked and they have to have the SIL Global signal on them. All that sort of stuff. Don't go buying stuff if you don't think they're any good. Scott and Zaina, can you talk about cost for installing water meters in Ipswich? No, I can't because I don't know Ipswich well enough. You should be able to ring the when I talk about installing water meters, it may be that you're doing a small unit development and you've got to upgrade the front meter to a bigger service, and there'll be a cost to that. So without knowing what you're trying to do, a water meter, when you buy a block of land, there's already a water meter installed or a place for a water meter to be installed. I'm talking about when you're extending or adding a, subdividing or doing something like that, you need to have the cost of that. The council's usually pretty good, and the plumbing department in the council Ipswich can help you out. Thanks, Elizabeth, for that comment. That's nice. Andrew, is this weekend Sydney program going to be held in Brisbane? I never know. I can't remember whether Fast Profits and Extreme in the second half of the year is going to be anywhere else. And I don't know if they'll do that offer again either, because it's a pretty good offer. Is there a way of telling a lot is a good deal on purely the land value versus asking price? Let me get this through my head. Is there a way of telling a lot is a good deal on purely the land value versus asking price? Sorry, assessing a deal, I mean. Okay, so is there a way of assessing a deal on purely the land value versus the asking price? Well, I don't often pay more than what I believe a property is worth simply by looking at what recently is sold in the area. Now, the only time I'll pay more for a property is on an option deal where I say, well, they're giving up their time, so they're wanting to do a deal now. The only way I in a hot market, the only way I'm going to convince someone to do this deal is if I pay them more with the option at the back end. I may not take up the option, so there's a court case in 2 days where I've got a what do you call that thing? God, I've gone blank. I've got an offer in. God, you'd think I'd know what I'm talking about. I've got an offer in on a property on the Sunshine Coast, which is a marriage split up, and it's going to court, and I'm the only one with the offer in, I believe, and that's a call option. And on that, I'm paying more than what I think the property is worth, but at the same time, I think I can do a lot with this property. So, that's the only time I'd pay more for it. So, I would be looking at comparable sales. I'd be looking at what like for like. And if you're buying a really old crappy house on a property, and you're paying the same as land value, remember you're going to have to knock that house down if you're going to build, and that will increase it. Michael, I've only got those. That doesn't make sense. You might have to retype it, Michael. Ian, Fast Profits and Extreme Income is on in Brisbane, Friday the 14th to Monday the 17th of November. But like I said, I can't guarantee that they're going to do the same offer again. I suppose you want me to do that now. I will do it now. So Lee has just said boldproperties.com.au. So let's have a look at that. She's saying that, oh, server not found. Let me put the W's in. Whoops. Sorry. Bold properties. Let's have a look at what comes up. So Lee's saying that they're pretty cheap build costs. Welcome to Bold Properties. Displays, contact, designs. So Michael says, thoughts on moving existing house to back a property if it has a smaller footprint to allow a larger block at the front for a new build? I will talk about that. When you go, so Bold Properties here, there seems to be just some designs and stuff in there. So thanks, Lee. Everyone can have a look at that. That's more Queensland type builders. So they're Southeast Queensland. They're not somehow related to you, are they, Lee? Okay, my thoughts about moving the front house to the back. Moving houses, if you've got one and you're going to move it at the back, that's great. You've got to be wary of what it's going to cost you to bring it up to standard. So you might have to rewire, you might have to replumb, you might have to put a new hot water heater in, you may need to put a new roof in, you may have to install insulation, you might, and if it's got asbestos, you've got to remove every bit of it once you move it. So you've got to look at the costs of what that's going to end up by the time you've moved it and what the back product is going to be. So if that's what you're thinking on doing on one of your jobs, Michael, just contact Christine or I tomorrow and we'll go through it with you with numbers. Hi, Ian. For finance purposes, could you please explain the difference between a market valuation obtained from an independent valuer versus a valuation provided by a valuer who is on the bank's panel? Nothing. So usually a bank valuer's panel will be an independent valuer. It's just that they've done that. So what I normally do is if I'm looking at a property, now we've recently contracted a property where I want to do something to it, but it's a long-term settlement. So for me, we've agreed on a price. One of my conditions of my price was that I was going to pay $600 for a valuer to come in and value the property and make sure that I'm comfortable with the bank, with the independent valuer bringing it up. But I also checked that that independent valuer was on the bank panel of the bank that my strategist said, or mortgage broker said, was going to be on the bank that we're going to choose. So in which case that person came in, I paid the $600, they valued it and valued up okay. And in 12 months' time, when I do finally settle on the property, I'll know that I can get back that value. And you know, being that the market doesn't move too much, it goes okay. So you can go and do a construction, get an independent valuer that's on the bank panel to come out and do the valuation for you. And if you don't like it, you could lose it. You could lose it. You just misplace the valuer's document and find another panelist to do the thing. So I've seen some enormous differences in valuations happen. All right, my throat is not great, and I'm going to say goodbye. So remember, you can always send in some suggestions for webinars that you want to get done. I would say if you're going to do that, you've got 2 weeks' time. You've got another webinar that's a Q&A. Send those questions into questions@realestatesuccess.com.au. That's questions@realestatesuccess.com.au. You can also send some suggestions to webinars to that address. And we can go through and we can put something together for you. Always looking for something new to bring to the table, always loving to find out new stuff myself. So thank you for tonight, and hopefully we'll hear from Dipna very soon. To those people that are going on the weekend, I look forward to seeing you. We've got lots of new stuff in the programs there. If you're an ultimate and you'd like to talk about upgrading to Quantum, ring Knowledge Source and speak to Larissa. If you're a existing Quantum and want to come to this weekend, I think they are charging $150, which is crazy, for the 4 days. Ring up Larissa and book yourself in. So I know there's a few places left, look forward to seeing you all. If not, I'll see you at the next Ultimate Bootcamp in the second half of the year, and have a great night.